Good morning, everyone. We, as you know, recently observed Kali Puja this past Tuesday, and I thought I would speak about Kali the Mother, because the worship of Mother Kali is extremely significant in our tradition, because of course, Sri Ramakrishna, his worship of Mother Kali in the Dakshineswar Kali Temple. His first experience of God realization was through the worship of Mother Kali. Holy Mother used to look upon Sri Ramakrishna as Kali herself, and he used to look upon her also as Kali, a very interesting relationship. And then the role of Mother Kali in the life of Swami Vivekananda is also something very, very fascinating, because it took a long time for him to really understand that what Sri Ramakrishna meant by Mother Kali and the significance of the worship of Mother Kali in spiritual life. So that at the end of his life, Swamiji, that was everything for him. He used to say, this worship of Mother Kali is a fad for me. So it became something extremely important for him. So from a philosophical point of view, which we went through a little bit a couple of weeks ago, worship of Divine Mother, but also from this historical point of view, the worship of Mother Kali is something very, very important in our tradition. And of course, Kali worship is something that's been misunderstood for centuries in India itself, even in Calcutta itself. So for all of these reasons, I wanted to go through this a little bit this morning. The imagery and the symbology of Mother Kali is the first thing that will put a lot of people off. That why worship God, especially those from the Western country, why have a conception of God that is so strange looking that you'll have severed arms that have kind of strung together to make a little skirt that Mother Kali is wearing, otherwise she's not wearing anything. And then she'll have skulls strung together like a mala around her neck. And she'll be holding the severed head in one hand and the sword in the other. She's kind of a split personality. One side is Vara Abhaya. There's Vara Abhaya. They're granting boons and freedom from fear. And the other side, she's slaying a demon and holding his head like that. So there's so many standing on the chest of her husband, sticking her tongue out, red tongue and everything, and being offered the slaughtered goat, sometimes even the buffalo and other things. And you can imagine. And of course, always hidden talk about this Narabali, that the human sacrifice and that these dacoits are worshiping. So you can imagine what the British thought when they first went to India. And Kolkata, of course, was their capital. So what was their reaction to all of this? They thought, what a horrible conception of God is this. This is a bloodthirsty type of goddess. And so many of these Western educated young people were influenced by or wanted to impress or were mimicking the British, so they also looked down upon this Kali worship. It's very interesting that one of the turning points in Kali worship in kind of making it a little bit more acceptable to people was when a lecture was given in Albert Hall by Sister Nivedita, a Western woman herself. So the history of this worship of Mother Kali and how it gets transformed from this type of, we may say, worship of bloodthirsty mother to the very sweet relationship that Sri Ramakrishna has to Mother Kali is also another very fascinating thing. So we see, first of all, this black complexion. Why does Mother Kali have a black complexion? We have, again, so many beautiful songs about that. Is my mother really black? She may appear like that. She may appear in all different forms. She's everything. A very wonderful conception of Divine Mother as the ground of everything. Everything. Mother has become everything. And sometimes Sri Ramakrishna will explain also that black gives us the feeling of the infinite absolute. So we'll get that type of interpretation. Then standing on Shiva, who is lying prostrate at her feet, standing on his chest, this is also taken as highly symbolic of the relationship between Purusha and Prakriti, Shiva and Shakti, that we have two aspects of divinity. One is this infinite, absolute, actionless, pure conscious aspect, and the other is the power, the Shakti, and they have to be in combination with each other. So she's standing on his chest, maybe sticking her tongue out of embarrassment. We don't know what the, like they do in some parts of India. But anyhow, so we see all of this different imagery, that she's in the cremation ground, that she has jackals that are her companions there, and yet this is the conception of God as mother, a very sweet type of relationship also. So this beautiful song we just heard, this Kamala Kanta song, where we see both sides of this, that there's a loving mother and everything, and yet Doriyoshi holding a sword in her hand. So this is the mother that loves the child and has such a beautiful, sweet relationship. But I think Swamiji says in one place, if a tiger comes after the child, where will the mother be? She'll be in the mouth of the tiger, ready to fight it and kill it. So it's a very interesting conception that there's no sweeping under the table of all the nasty things in life. That we simply thank God for all the sweet and nice things and all the terrible things. We invent some devil, or we simply sweep it under the rug, or we come up with karma theories. This is a conception of God that is all-encompassing, that whatever happens in this world is the will of the Divine Mother, good or bad, and that there'll always be a combination of these two. So historically, we see that this worship of Mother Kali at one point was really a kind of a brutal thing. It was the dacoits. We know that Holy Mother's Dakar Baba, that when she had that experience, they were Kali worshippers. And this, what is it called? Telopela, the Kali temple. They always talked that there was human sacrifice and everything. And so this was one aspect of it. And then, of course, all types of mother worship would have these little tantric rituals connected with this something called this makara. These five different M's that they have, Matsya, mother, and other things. They're taking mangsa, taking meat and fish and wine and sex and all sorts of things that became incorporated, tantric and things, into this these secret societies of Kali worshippers. Not that everybody did it. But there's Vamachara stuff, which Swamiji himself hated. He hated all these things. So not only did the British hate this conception, but Swami Vivekananda himself, as a young boy, he said, how I hated his mother Kali. That meant Sri Ramakrishna. How I hated his mother Kali. And how he couldn't understand after that, all that realization and all that samadhi and everything else, he used to say, yet he still goes there. Meaning that Thakur still would go to the Kali temple and bow down and just spend long hours waving the fan chamar in front of Mother Kali. So this is the one side of the picture. Now the other side is that this Mother Kali is the divine mother, and the relationship is one of mother to child, and the child only sees the sweet side of this. So we have, again, beautiful Ram Prasad songs about this. Mother, your red eyes don't frighten me. I am your small child and everything. Very beautiful songs like that. So Ram Prasad, who was a great poet saint of Bengal, really was the, as far as I know, the precursor of this very sweet relationship between the mother and the child. And at least Ramakrishna always gave him credit. Ram Prasad, there were others, Kamala Kanta, who composed the song that we heard. There was a whole tradition that possibly just started with Ram Prasad. That I don't know how much earlier it was, which emphasizes completely this other side, where Goddess worshiped his mother not because of any terrible aspect. Goddess worshiped his mother because the child loves the mother. There's a special relationship between the mother and the child. Traditionally, the father is the one who has to punish, and the mother is the one who will soothe the child. And even if the child is angry at the mother, who will it cry for? The mother, that way. So it became changed very radically, and this is what appealed to Sri Ramakrishna. When we get to Swamiji, we'll see he liked both sides. This worship of the terrible also was something very important to him. But the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, Gotamrita, is filled with songs of Ramprasad and others. And this was really Sri Ramakrishna's main spiritual attitude. He practiced all different spiritual paths. He had all different attitudes. That he practiced all of the different bhavas, that looking upon God as a child, looking upon God as friend, as beloved, all of the different ones, always went back to this. And it's interesting because he came from a family of where they worshipped Rama, Raghuvir. That was the whole background. We don't really hear of any Kali temple in Kamarpakur. And how much, probably he knew the songs of Ramprasad and others, but it wasn't something he grew up with. And yet, by divine fate, it was the Kali temple that needed a pujari when his brother was first hired there, and they went together in Dakshineswar, so he became priest of the Kali temple. And we know the whole story, that he wasn't content to do some ritualistic, formal type of worship, to an image, a clay image, of course made from basalt, some type of stone, of Mother Kali. So he became obsessed with this idea. Who is it that I'm worshiping? Is it just some image? Or is there a reality behind it? Is there really a divine mother of this whole universe? And if there is, I have to know her. And this became an absolute obsession with him. So that he gave up, practically gave up food and sleep for 6 years, doing all these different types of spiritual practice, but initially just for this vision of the Divine Mother. And it, of course, it reached the point where he was about to take his own life, about to grab the sword that's kept in the temple and cut his throat, and then he had that vision of Mother Kali. What was his vision? We only hear that he lost all outer consciousness, and when he came to relative consciousness, that he said it was as if wave after wave of divine bliss came. I was inundated and lost in this ocean of consciousness. And they say, but when he came to, and how long he remained in that state, we don't know. When he came to, they say, on his lips were the words, ma, 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 mother, mother, mother. So perhaps he had some type of vision also, because we generally don't think of this as his nirvikalpa samadhi experience. So something going on internally, God knows what it was, but he felt that, yes, that he had reached the culmination of not even spiritual practice, because he didn't do anything according to any traditional type of sadhana. It was all this vakulata. It was all this tremendous longing for mother, spending entire nights in the forest, in the jungle north of the temple, yes, weeping and calling on mother, sometimes meditation, sometimes prayer, sometimes just pouring his heart out for the realization of the Divine Mother. So after he had that, he did all sorts of other spiritual practices, but at the end of each one, he seemed to come back to this. This was the one that was nearest to his heart, this relationship of the mother to the child. So as I say, we have to give a lot of credit to Ramprasad and the songs that he composed and his own realization. I want to just briefly say a few words about Ramprasad, because there was a time when I also became very fascinated with him and his beautiful poetry that he wrote and his life and everything. So that I tried to get copies of all of his songs, and I visited his birthplace also. When I was in India for 1 year, I was there to do research in the university, and I rented a couple of rooms in a small house, a place in Calcutta, and the people that I rented from, the man of the house was a great devotee of Mother Kali. So when the first night when I was there, and I could hear upstairs, he was singing some song of Ramprasad. So I was very charming, and we became very close. I became close with the whole family, and he used to go to Kalighat every Saturday night with his wife and small daughter. And so I went with them several times, and the two of us decided to go to Halishohar. This is the birthplace of Ramprasad. And it's kept there just the way it has a pilgrimage place. So the original house is there, a little temple. We would say he also planted a Panchavati. We'll find so many parallels, things that Thakur did later. He also planted a Panchavati, five sacred trees where he could do his spiritual practice. And this is also the burial of skulls, and he did all of those things. That was a wonderful experience. You can see if you go there, all of these places, and the bathing ghat where he went. And at the age of 80, on the night of Kali Puja, entering into the Ganga and singing some songs of Mother Kali, passed away. So a wonderful life of Ramprasad. As I say, it's very similar to Thakur's life. When he was young, he wasn't interested in marriage at all. He wanted to devote all of his time to this worship and calling on Mother Kali, but they arranged a marriage, and his wife was also a great sadhaka, and she a worshiper of Mother Kali. So the two of them together spent their time in spiritual practice. Then father died and left the family in poverty. Where have we heard this before? Sri Ramakrishna had to go to Calcutta with his older brother, Swamiji. Also, when his father died, he had to look for work. So where did Ramprasad go? He went to Calcutta. Yeah. So he went there, and he had to find some way of making money for the family. So he took a job as a clerk, and he was absolutely ill-suited to that job. And even then, if you wanted to be successful in any business, you had to learn to take bribes and do all sorts of things. Yeah. So he was very honest, and he wouldn't do it. So nobody liked him in the office. They were always looking for ways to get him fired. And they noticed one day that instead of keeping accounts, he would be scribbling things in the ledger of the account book, the margins there. So they took a look, and they saw that he was composing songs or just writing the name Durga, Durga, Kali, Kali, like that. So they squealed on him. They took the book and they took it to his boss, and his boss is reading some of these songs, and they see tears are coming out of his eyes. So it turned out that the boss was a great devotee that way. And the first song that we have, it's he says, "Mother, let me be the keeper of thy accounts. So I don't want to be a regular clerk here. I want to be your clerk. I won't be ungrateful to you. Everyone plunders the treasure of thy feet. I can't bear it. The custodian of thy treasure is the ever-forgetful Shiva. Though he is naturally generous and easily pleased, still thou keepest thy treasure in his custody. Half of your body is his estate, yet his salary is handsome. Though I am your servant without a pittance, I have only the right to bow down at your feet." So the Ramprasad's boss said, "Ramprasad, you're not cut out to do this type of work. You go back to your village. I'll give you the same salary that I'm giving you now without doing any work. Just continue to compose these beautiful songs and poems." So he went and he did that. And this pension was just enough for them to live a very simple life. Then one day he used to go to the Ganga, is very close to the house. He used to go there, and while taking the bath, he would be singing his songs. One of the Maharajas from that local area happened to be going by on ship, and he heard him singing. And they stopped everything, and they invited him on board, and he sang some songs. And he was also charmed by all of this, and he gave him some land rent-free that he could live on. So the rest of his life, he didn't have to worry about anything. His wife looked after all the household matters, and he spent all of his time just in worship of the Divine Mother and composing the songs that he did. And they say towards the end of his life, he got more and more absorbed in this idea of the impersonal aspect of the Divine Mother. So we find some beautiful songs. Who composed it? Nibiru Antarima? Yeah, that's a Kamala Kanta song. But that same type of idea, that in Den's Darkness, that's also a beautiful song. Kamala Kanta also was wonderful. In Den's Darkness, Mother, thy formless beauty sparkles. It's such a nice idea. Formless beauty. How can there be formless beauty? Only these great souls can see that. Yeah. So that's why the yogis meditate in a deep forest cave, very dark cave that way. So as his mind was turning more and more towards this formless aspect, that was an indication he was ready to give up the body. Sri Ramakrishna also said that. He said, I don't know why now my mind is turning more and more to that infinite absolute Brahman. That meant it's time for the play to end. So as I say, on Kali Puja, when he was 80 years old, that night, he went into the Ganga and gave up the body. Immersed in the Ganges that way. So the influence of Ramprasad on the life of Sri Ramakrishna was very, very important. We find this sometimes, that someone plays a very significant role in somebody else's life, and then they're forgotten. And the second person is the main. Say, the life of Christ, we have to have John the Baptist. He played a very significant role. He baptized Jesus and started everything, but he's a very secondary figure. The life of Chaitanya Deva, we have other, Advaita Acharya and others, they had an important influence, Ishwarputi, others, but Chaitanya Deva becomes a great figure. So this Ramprasad had a very significant role to play, maybe small, and of course they never met, separated by 100 years, but a very significant role to play. So Sri Ramakrishna used to say during his period of sadhana, calling on the Divine Mother, he used to pray to the Mother, Mother, you revealed yourself to Ramprasad, why won't you reveal yourself to me? So that was that prayer that was always on his lips. So we see, of course, in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, that the same combination of devotion and this philosophical side also. Now, Sri Ramakrishna, he had a slightly different understanding than others. And that was because, for him, it wasn't that you had two, Shiva and Shakti. It wasn't that Mother Kali represented only the power associated with the Brahman. They were one and the same. For him, the Divine Mother was both infinite absolute, and Nirakar and Sakar, both. Both personal, impersonal, God with form, without form. Everything was the Divine Mother. So and the psychology behind all of it, that this is that sweet relationship that we have, that the mother is the forgiving one, the mother is the loving one. Traditionally, not always the case. Father can also be sweet and loving, yeah. But this intimate idea that one can force one's demands on God the way a small child will on the mother. We have one song of Ramprasad, this bitterly contested suit between the mother and her son. Now this is Abhiman, this is a very nice relationship or type of attitude that the worshiper has, that the child can be upset with the mother and say, oh, you won't let me do that, then I won't talk to you today. That's all. Have that type of very sweet, close relationship with the mother. So this bitterly contested suit between the mother and her son, what sport it is, says Ramprasad. I shall not cease tormenting thee till thou thyself shall yield the fight and take me in thine arms at last. And then, mother, am I thy 8-month-old child? Thy red eyes cannot frighten me. A deed of gift I hold in my hand, attested by thy husband Shiva. I shall sue thee if I must, and with a single point shall win. So, child can get angry with a mother. This pique, this feeling of a little hurt pride and everything. But still, the child knows nothing but the mother. So this is that relationship, and sees the mother everywhere. Now here we start getting the combination of psychology and philosophy. The very small infant knows nothing but the mother. It can't distinguish between even the body of the mother and its own body. But philosophically also, Brahman has become all this. We put this in terms of the Divine Mother, and we get this idea. So Sri Ramakrishna very often would say, not simply everything is Chinmay, everything is pure consciousness, or I see God has become everything, or Brahman has become everything. Sometimes he would say, I see it, the Divine Mother herself has become everything. And really it's the Shakti aspect that becomes everything. So we have a song, another song of Ramprasad. Oh, my mind, worship Kali to your heart's content, repeating day and night the Guru's mantra. Then, this is very, very nice, how he sees the Divine Mother wherever he looks. Everything is his mother. While lying down, feel that you are prostrating at mother's feet. While sleeping, feel that you are meditating on mother. Let your eating of food be oblations to her. Mother Kali is the embodiment of all the sounds of the alphabet. Whatever enters your ears is her holy name. Joyously, Ramprasad says, Mother is manifest in all things. While walking about the town, feel that you are circumambulating Mother Kali. So this is a way to keep the mind always fixed on this idea of the Divine Mother. Whatever we see is nothing but Mother. The other thing is this concept of viraha bhava, of separation. We have it to a great extent, of course, in the Radha Krishna idea. When Radha is not with Krishna, the whole mind is thinking, when will I see my Krishna? When will I see my Krishna? It's much stronger in this child-mother relationship than that. Even in that, which is considered the Hayat, is much stronger. If we've ever seen in the shopping mall or something, if a small child gets separated from the mother, how the child will have a complete temper tantrum, not a tantrum, screaming, where is my mother, where is my mother, tears coming out. So Thakur used to say that this is the feeling that we have to have at not realizing God. This is the height of Bhakulata, this tremendous yearning and longing for God. So this is very, very, very strong element of this attitude. Shantan Bhab, Thakur used to say, that my mood is the mood of the child, of a small child. Small child who can't live without his mother. Then what happens after this realization is that not only does one see mother everywhere, one feels mother is within, mother is doing everything and directing everything. So we have so many songs like that. Even this Kamalakanta song, we had that, as I dance, as you make me dance. Huh? That same thing. So this one Ramprasad song, this is our Shokli Tomariyache that everybody knows. All is done after thine own sweet will. Thou art in truth self-willed, O Redeemer of mankind. Thou workest thine own work. Men only call it theirs. Thou it is that holdest the elephant in the mire. Thou that helpest the lame scale the loftiest hill. On some thou dost bestow the bliss of Brahmanhood, yet others thou dost hurl into the world below. Thou art the moving force, and I the mere machine. The house am I, and thou the spirit dwelling there. I am the chariot, and thou the charioteer. I move alone as thou, O Mother, movest me. Now there's one other side to this Mother Kali worship in the life of Sri Ramakrishna that I'm convinced it's impossible for any of us to really understand. And that is, she was like a guardian angel for him. That she was so real and alive and spoke to him. He would see her, had visions all of the time, that he really had the conviction that whenever he said anything, the words were supplied by her. So we have this infinite, absolute, transcendent element. We have the Shakti element, and then the extreme personal God aspect that really she's always present and guiding him in every step of the way. So as I said before, that Thakur's attitude was that there's only one reality, not with the two sides to it perhaps, but Mother Kali, infinitely personal for him, and yet one with the Supreme Brahman. There's no real difference there. They're not walking out of me. Don't feel bad. They have another engagement. So when Narendra used to criticize his mother Kali, and say, who is this mother that you're talking about and worshiping and all of that? He would say, all in good time, my child, Kali is none other than Brahman. That which is called Brahman is really Kali. So no distinction whatsoever. She is the primal energy. When that energy remains inactive, I call it Brahman. And when it creates, preserves, or destroys, I call it Shakti or Kali. What you call Brahman, I call Kali. And he knew that Narendra, he loved this concept of Brahman. Brahman and Kali are not different. They are like the fire and its power to burn. If one thinks of fire, one must think of its power to burn. If one recognizes Kali, one must also recognize Brahman. Again, if one recognizes Brahman, one must recognize Kali. They're not two different things. This person is a person, and yet this person also has so many individual qualities and characteristics and talents and skills. Brahman and its power are identical. It is Brahman whom I address as Shakti or Kali. Two weeks ago, we looked a little bit at the comparison between this Advaita Vedanta and this Shakta philosophy. And really, the main difference that we saw is that this world doesn't have to be denied as something unreal, according to the worshippers of the Divine Mother. They see everything as a divine manifestation. So sometimes Thakur will say, Brahman has become all of this. When he says Brahman has become all of this, he really means this Kali concept. Because Brahman doesn't undergo any change. Brahman is transcendent. But the saguna aspect, or he would say sometimes that it's Shakti itself which has become all of this. So we find that the main distinction is that the Shakta will not say this world is unreal. And Thakur so many times said that. I don't like to call this world unreal. So it's just a difference of attitude. If we look at the snake and the rope, if we think that there's a real snake, and someone say, no, that's a false idea. So we can say, okay, that's all right. But if someone else says, what you see there, you're really seeing it and it's really real, only you've misidentified it. You are seeing Brahman, you don't know it. So don't throw the whole thing out. Don't throw the baby out with the dishwater, with the bathwater, that this is really Brahman that you're seeing. But through inability to recognize it, you're thinking that it's something else. So Thakur had a very wonderful statement. Somebody asked him, is the world unreal? And he said, the world is unreal until the realization of God. The exact opposite of what we normally hear. Once we realize God, we see the world is unreal, the Brahman alone is real. He said the opposite. Before that, this world is unreal because we think it has an independent material existence. We don't know that it's a manifestation of Brahman. After God realization, we'll see that it's nothing but Brahman itself, the most real thing in the world. Swami Turiyananda, who was a great Advaitin, on his deathbed was heard to say, Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam, not Jagat Mithya. That Brahman is real, the world is real. Famous statement, of course, is the opposite. Brahman is real, the world is unreal. But he said it from that other point of view. He saw everything is the manifestation of the Divine Mother that way. The very final word about the Mother Kali in Thakur's eyes was that she's inscrutable. She's Mahamaya. That our understanding of her will always be limited by the limitations of our own human mind. So he said over and over, she is more than we can understand. Her nature is inscrutable. Mahamaya, the great enchantress. Then he would quote the song of Ramprasad. Who is there who can understand what Mother Kali is? Even the six darshanas, that means the whole of Hindu philosophy, all of these darshanas are powerless to reveal her. But then he would say, what need do we have to know everything about her? All we need is that we have a mother, that she's always there, she's always available to us. Now, Swami Vivekananda, we know he had this kind of tortured relationship with Mother Kali, that in the beginning, he also thought he was a member of the Brahmo Samaj, so naturally he also thought this is the lowest form of idolatry, idol worship, and offering the goats, cutting their heads and all of that, that what a horrible practice this is and everything. He didn't really understand who this Mother Kali was in the eyes of Sri Ramakrishna. So there was a gradual transformation. It took a long time. And we know that there was one great turning point after Swamiji's father passed away and the family was in dire poverty. Just overnight, they were a very prosperous family overnight because the other family members turned against them, wanted to kick them out of the house and take full possession of the property. There was nobody to bring in any money. His father, who earned a good living, was very charitable. He gave a lot of money away to the very same relatives that were trying to take the property. This is a horrible thing. And many of them would just waste the money. So Swamiji Narendra went to Sri Ramakrishna and said, look, I don't know about this Mother Kali business, but she seems to listen to you. I don't have too much faith. If you pray to her that my family not suffer like this, I'm sure she'll listen to you. A little funny way of thinking. It means that deep down he must have understood that there's something there. Yeah. So Sri Ramakrishna said, you know, she's not helping you because you don't believe in her. You have to be the one. You go to the Kali temple and you yourself have to pray for help. So Narendra thought, okay, let me do that. And as he's thinking and walking there, he's starting to get into a little mood. His mind is changing. Thakur was a trickster. Sometimes he would play tricks on people like that. So he said, a sort of profound inebriation possessed me. I was reeling. A firm conviction gripped me that I would actually see Mother and hear her words. Coming to the temple, I saw that Mother was actually pure consciousness. This was also Sri Ramakrishna's experience. Was actually living and was really the fountainhead of infinite love and beauty. My heart swelled with loving devotion, and beside myself with bliss, I made repeated salutations to her, praying, Mother, grant me discrimination, grant me divine knowledge and devotion. Ordain that I may always have an unobstructed vision of you. My heart was flooded with peace. The whole universe completely disappeared, and Mother alone remained, filling my heart. This was a common experience for Swamiji, Sri Ramakrishna, and everything. When the mind would go higher, the universe would disappear before their very eyes. We see the world the way we see it because our mind is at a certain level. When it goes to these very high realms, everything seems to disappear for them. So he returned to Sri Ramakrishna's room. Probably didn't even remember why he went there in the first place. So Thakur asked, did you ask for the money and clothes and food and everything for your family? And he said, oh, I went there. How could I? I forgot. My mind was in a different place. He said, go, do it again. Second time, the same thing happened. Then the third time he went. And that time, Narendra, he had a very strong willpower. You know that. That he said, I made sure that I won't get lost again, that I won't forget the purpose of my going, that my family needs help. So he went there, and he remembered, but he felt ashamed of himself to ask for something so small in the presence of the Mother of the Universe. So he went back and told Sri Ramakrishna, and then Thakur said, ah, my child, it's okay. Then don't worry. Mother will make sure that they get simple clothes and simple food like that. And of course, they never had to really suffer from dire poverty after that. At all. Then Swamiji, of course, was filled with his love for the Divine Mother, so Thakur taught him that beautiful song, Amar Ma Tvam Hi Tara, that song that we heard, I think, Kali Puja night. It's been sung many times here, a very beautiful song. And he learned that song, he wanted to learn it, he didn't know it before, and he spent the whole night singing. So the next day, people came. And they saw, what is this? Narendra is sleeping in Thakur's room, and it's the middle of the morning. So they asked, what's going on? Why is he sleeping? So they said, last night my Naren accepted Mother Kali. With great joy in his face, he said, he spent the whole night singing the song. So only recently did he try to get some sleep. So he was up the whole night that way. This devotion to Mother Kali that Swamiji had after that remained hidden. He didn't talk about it very much. And perhaps this was also Thakur's trick a little bit. That was also locked up in the box. We'll see that. But we have some indications in some letters that Swamiji wrote. One, a very beautiful letter to Mary Hale. Kali worship is my special fad. You never heard me preach it or read of my preaching it in India. I only preach what is good for universal humanity. If there is any curious method which applies entirely to me, I keep it a secret, and there it ends. Then we know the story when Swamiji was in Kashipur, and that Sri Ramakrishna was very ill, and he had his nirvikalpa samadhi, and when he went to Thakur said, now you've been given this great treasure. This will remain locked up in a box, as it were. And only when you've done the Divine Mother's work will this be opened and you'll get it again. So a little bit of that, of course, was a little Maya came over Swamiji in the sense that he felt this mission in life to spread the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, to establish the monastic organization, which Thakur wanted. But also a little bit of it, I think, was this love of Mother Kali. And that also came out a little bit later. Thakur himself said, now Mother has shown you everything. Just as a treasure is locked up in a box, so will this realization you have just had remain with me. Sometimes Thakur said my work, sometimes Mother's work. He made no distinction between himself and Mother Kali when he was in that mood. You have work to do. When you have finished my work, the treasure box will be unlocked again, and you will know everything then as you did just now. Now, when did this box get unlocked? Of course, we don't know it exactly, but when Swamiji went on pilgrimage to Amarnath, this was obviously a very strong turning point in his life. And again, this divine worship of Mother Kali came rushing back in at that same period. When Swamiji went to Amarnath, there's a worship of Shiva. So the whole mind was fixed on Shiva. He had brought with him some of his Western women disciples. Sister Nivedita was there, Josephine McLeod, others. So Sister Nivedita gives us a full account of all of these things. We're very fortunate that she was there at the time. So everything was Shiva, singing songs to Shiva, 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 everything on his lips, Shiva. And he had the vision. He went to the Amarnath and saw the ice lingam there, and had a very profound experience. Afterwards, even his health was a little bit shattered. He felt that he had been given this boon, that he wouldn't die until he himself willed to die. This is the boon that one gets from this Amarnath darshan. So for some reason after that, his mind changed, and everything was Mother Kali. Everything was the Divine Mother. And he took this attitude of the devotion that a small child had for its mother. So this Sister Nivedita is telling this. Songs of Ram Prasad were constantly on his lips. He told his disciples, wherever he turned, he felt the presence of the mother as if she were a person in the room. This is how Thakur's whole life was like that. And felt as if she or Sri Ramakrishna, again, no distinction, were holding him by the hand and leading his every step. And this absorption in the mother became stronger and stronger, and he had to leave. He couldn't bear to have anybody's company at that time. So he went off to some solitary place all by himself. And one evening, whole mind was fixed on Mother Kali, and everything that was dark and painful and inscrutable in the universe. So for Swamiji, he also had that traditional side of Mother Kali, as with this worship of the terrible. So he became obsessed with this idea. And again, to reach that reality behind all of it, everything that is good in the universe, everything that is bad in the universe. And he had a great revelation. He had a great realization at that time. And all of this came out, poured out through his pen in a beautiful poem, Kali the Mother. So I want to read that. The stars are blotted out, the clouds are covering clouds, and darkness, vibrant, sonant. In the roaring, whirling wind are the souls of a million lunatics just loose from the prison house, wrenching trees by the roots, sweeping all from the path. The sea has joined the fray and swirls up mountain waves to reach the pitchy sky. The flash of lurid light reveals on every side a thousand shades of death begrimmed in black, scattering plagues and sorrows. Dancing mad with joy, come, mother, come. For terror is thy name, death is in thy breath, and every shaking step destroys a world for'er. Thou time, the all-destroyer, come, mother, come. And then the beautiful final line, who dares misery love and hug the form of death, dance in destruction's dance, to him the mother comes. So this was a great turning point. After that, everything, the whole mind was fixed on the Divine Mother. He told Sister Nivedita, learn to recognize mother as instinctively in evil, terror, sorrow, and annihilation, as in that which makes for sweetness and joy. Swamiji again left the group. He went to a very famous pilgrimage place called Kheer Bhavani, which is a temple to the Divine Mother, and also in Kashmir. And he went just as a simple pilgrimage. He did everywhere, even when he went to Amarnath. He bathed everywhere like everybody else, even though he had very poor health. He just waited in line with all of them, just like a simple, humble pilgrim. When he went to this temple, Kheer Bhavani temple, it had been more or less destroyed during the Mughal invasion at one time. And the thought occurred to him, if I had been here, I would have laid down my life to protect you. He's talking to the mother in the temple. Then he heard the voice of the Divine Mother scolding him. And later he explained, he said, no more Hari Om, it is all mother now. All my patriotism is gone. Now it is only mother, mother. I've been very wrong. Mother said to me, what even if unbelievers should enter my temples and defile my images? What is that to you? Do you protect me or do I protect you? So there is no more patriotism. It's an interesting language he uses. There is no more patriotism. I'm only a little child. When we get to the very final day of Swamiji's life, he woke up early that morning. His health, which very often happens, seemed a little bit better on the final day. They say sometimes just before the candle burns out, the flame gets very bright. So they all thought he was a little better. He got up early. He went and meditated for a long time in the shrine and locked the door so he was all alone there. And then when he left, they heard him singing this song, beautiful song, to the Divine Mother. The Kamala Kanta song. And I'll close with this song, and then we'll sit for a few minutes. Is Kali, my mother, really black? The naked one, though black she seems, lights the lotus of the heart. Men call her black, but yet my mind will not believe that she is so. Now she is white, now red, now blue. Now she appears as yellow, too. I hardly know who mother is, though I have pondered all my life. Now Purusha, pure spirit. And now Prakriti, nature. And now the void she seems to be. To meditate on all these things confounds poor Kamalakanta's wits. Salutations to the Divine Mother who dwells within all beings as the Mother herself. Salutations to her again and again. Salutations to her.